We welcome in Scott Burnside, Burnside on Hockey, now with the LA Kings covering this series. Good morning, Scott. Welcome back to Sports 1440. You're with Kevin Karius and your old buddy Mark Spector.
Well, I'm very pleased to join you this morning, and I suspect may have told you we spent some time together last evening, and I just returned from a nice walk along your beautiful riverfront.
Wow.
So always good to be back in Edmonton.
Well, how did you, I mean, that dinner last night, holy cow, the meetings of the minds right there with you, Speck and Pierre LeBrun, holy moly.
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed the lights dimming all over Edmonton, the collection of intellect there, so yeah.
Oh, I could just imagine, yeah. You had fun though, Speck?
Oh, yeah, of course. Got the boys out. Shelka came out for dinner. Yeah. And I was a little nervous. Scotty decided they wanted to walk back to the JW Marriott from there.
Ooh.
We were at Cafe Amore, so it's just on like 106th Ave, 108th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, they're walking back. At least there's two of them. You guys made it back safely. That can be an ugly walk some days.
We did have to call out for directions a couple times, but it all worked out. It was great. In fact, we got back and caught the last part of the Vancouver-Nashville game, so it was good. It was a terrific night all the way around. Very memorable.
What did you make of that, the finish of that game, Scotty?
Yeah, you know, it's sort of interesting. I'm curious about, you know, what Vancouver is going to bring to the table after such a, I don't know whether it's a Cinderella season or not, but certainly a season that I don't think a lot of people expected. And I thought they'd sort of flattened out a bit maybe over the last month, although, you know, they still ended up winning the division, obviously. And and even though they got behind, I thought it was pretty impressive performance for them against a sort of a deceivingly good Nashville team. The Nashville's got some interesting things going on there. You got a lot of kids that, you know, play with a lot of pep, and of course the veterans like Ryan O'Reilly and Saros and Nett. I thought it was an important win. We haven't seen anyone but the home teams prevail this early in this playoff season. So it'll be interesting to see. I think historically over the last few years, it really doesn't matter whether you're at home or on the road. That it's not much more than a 50-50 split, but right now the home team certainly own the early advantage.
I thought, I thought Nashville watching that game was actually a very good matchup for Vancouver. They're a good enough team. They made the playoffs, but they don't do anything that one thing. They're not a giant team. They don't grind you to death, which I think might hurt. You know, LA might have been harder for the Canucks. I really like this Joshua kid a ton.
Mm-hmm.
Elias Pettersson hasn't shown up for 3 weeks here. I'm a little concerned about this guy. They're paying him $11.6 million for the next 8 years. You need a big game player there. But let's go to Colorado, speaking of which. So our Winnipeg, what makes you more concerned, that you scored six on Hellebuck and didn't win? Or if I'm the LA Kings, or I should say the Winnipeg Jets, am I more concerned that okay, I got seven. I'm not getting seven every night, but I needed seven to win last night. Like, who was sloppier in that game, Scotty?
Oh, my gosh. The way those goals were going in. And I like Winnipeg to win this series. I did, you know, for what they're worth, the predictions on in my newsletter. And I like Winnipeg to win that series. I thought really, you know, they really showed a lot over the last month of the season or so. And at the same time, Colorado really, you know, they're defensive. You know, it's easy to point at the goaltending, and Georgiev wasn't very good, obviously. But it's, you know, they've been a leaky team defensively for quite some time now. And I just thought, given the way the Jets have played, and certainly Connor Hellebuck, for my money, is going to win the Vezina Trophy, should... The overall Jets attack should be able to, you know, in spite of Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, Mikko Rantanen, that I thought the Jets would prevail. I did not think that they would be in a 7-6 shootout like that. And it really does make for interesting watching now in game two then. So what does – there really isn't a plan B for Colorado in goal. So, you know, I don't know what Jared Bednar's thinking about that, but they don't really have a plan B. And if you're the Jets, you know, they didn't look good early. Colorado really brang it. They really showed up early and really dictated pace, and shots on goal early were heavily in favor of Colorado. So I think if you're the Jets, you got to be pretty happy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you probably both teams throw that out the window and move on. And my guess is we won't see a game like that again. We may see Colorado give up a bunch of goals, though, because I'm not sure they've got a fix for that.
Kev, I want to say quickly, two games in a row, Winnipeg's pumped 7 goals past Colorado here.
Well, they had 6-3 advantage in the 5-on-5, 5v5. So they outscored 6-3. Adam Lowry outscored Nate McKinnon while playing against him, scored 2 goals. There's your game right there.
Yep.
So, Scott Burnside with us, Kevin Carey, Mark Spector on Sports 1440. Before we get into the Kings and Oilers, the series that you're covering for LA, Scott, I just wanted to get a quick thought on what you think's happening in the Boston-Toronto series. Very early yet, but the Bruins seem to dominate game number one. And as you know, in this country, everyone's going bananas thinking the Leafs are going to bow out to the Bees once again.
Yeah, I watched that game in Los Angeles, or technically in El Segundo, I suppose. And I just, a long time ago, I covered the Leafs for a couple of years, and it was sort of the opposite. This was in the Pat Quinn days, and the Leafs would limp into the playoffs, maybe in the 7 or 8 seed, and then it invariably crush a much better Ottawa team in the first round. And that was to be expected every spring. And unfortunately, now what you have with this Leaf team in the Austin Matthews era is that they light it up offensively during the regular season, and there's all kinds of hope and thinking about, will this be the end of the 67 curse? And they do not play. They don't translate well to the playoffs, and they just don't. And I don't know if it's a mindset, and I don't know. You know, it's easy to pile on Austin Matthews. Mitch Marner wasn't very good. William Nylander mysteriously plays all 82 games and then isn't able to play in game one. And just a team that looked out of sorts and really made it easy for Boston, right? I mean, your lack of discipline, your poor defensive play, your goaltending is only average. And again, there's not, I don't know what the, you know, the Joseph Woll, you don't really have a plan B, and so here you are. Now you're in an almost must-win situation for game two after playing so poorly in game one. I hate to say it, same old, same old. And I thought at least this was a good matchup for them. I thought this was way better than Florida, given that Boston, wasn't great down the stretch, and first playoff without Patrice Bergeron, no David Krejci. I really thought this would be a good matchup for the Leafs, but boy, they made it easy for Boston in game one, and they will have to be a lot better, or it'll be over in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk matchups. Let's go to the Kings' orders. We were just talking about how they seem to have a fourth line with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Quinton Byfield on it.
Carl Grundstrom will probably draw in here.
Grundstrom was coming back in. I guess my question, Scotty, is like, I guess on paper that's your fourth line. That's too much beef to be a fourth line, a real fourth line. No one planned on Pierre-Luc Dubois being a fourth line center when they signed that guy. And Quinton Byfield had 55 points. So I guess, is that a bit of an X factor for the Kings? If that line surely can't play like a fourth line, can they?
Well, no, I think the hope is, and Jim Hiller, I've been around for a few days now and had a chance to, chat with Jim, and you look at how this team is built, and Drew Doughty talked about this yesterday before we flew to Edmonton, and just how he felt this team might be as good a team as he's been on with the Kings basically since the last Cup win, which was the last time they won a playoff series in 2014. But he pointed out, listen, it's our consistency, right? When we're consistently playing the way we can, this is, it's a really good team. And it is. And the way they've built this lineup under Jim Hiller reminds me a bit of Vegas, is that they are four lines deep. I know it's the ultimate cliche. Every team would love to have four lines deep. But, to your point, and whether it's really a third line or a fourth line or whatever line it is, but if you have Pierre-Luc Dubois, And Quinton Byfield, you know, he slumped a little bit during the last part of the regular season, got a goal and an assist that pushed him over the edge for some bonuses. Very happy man after game 82, and his teammates were giving it to him. But I think Andre Kopitar said, no, it wasn't going to be a dinner. It was more like a banquet that he was going to owe the team for the bonuses. But you know, that's a line that should, you know, when they're going – and when they're going in a north-south manner, which I think is the key for Pierre Dubois, they can cause problems. They can create possession time in the O zone. They can create turnovers. Maybe you draw a penalty or two. And I think you look at all those lines. You know, Jim Hiller was talking about it the other day, but you've got Kevin Fiala, who might be, you know, in terms of raw skill, might be their most skilled player, but certainly highly skilled, playing on the wing on a line with Blake Lizotte and veteran Trevor Lewis. And Jim Hiller said he likes that line because he feels it suits Kevin Fiala's strength. You got two guys that can dig pucks, be disruptive in the offensive zone, and that gives Fiala space and time to do what he does with his skill set. So, you know, I think he, in the top two lines, I think it's fair to call them that, are both solid with really good players. You know, Trevor Moore's turned into an outstanding NHL player, like a bona fide top six guy. Obviously, Adrian Kempe is a top end performer. And having Victor Arvidsson back after missing most of the season, such a huge part of that line, playing with Phil Deneau and Trevor Moore. And he's got that playoff experience, been to a final, has a, you know, he's just sort of a presence about him. So I think the way that lineup is built, if they can stay consistent and if they don't, you know, give Edmonton too many power play opportunities and Jim Hiller doesn't have to shorten his bench, I think you'll find that those four lines play if not equal minutes, then within probably 3 or 4 minutes from top to bottom. And that's ideal for the LA Kings in terms of how they feel that they can maybe turn the tide in round three of this series.
Scott Burnside with us on Sports 1440. I agree. I think Victor Arvidsson is going to be such a critical piece to the Kings' success in this series. As you mentioned, went to a final with Matthias Ekholm with the Nashville Predators back in 2016-2017. You did mention Jimmy Hiller, Scott. And you've interviewed, you know, hundreds of coaches over the years in your time covering the NHL. What's your original take, your first take on just seeing a guy and getting to know him for the couple of days that you've been on the Kings beat, so to speak?
Yeah, it was interesting because I didn't know Jim, so I called Barry Trotz, and Barry gave him, hired him for his staff with the Islanders, and he's had a ton of NHL experience, right? Whether it's with Mike Babcock and Detroit and Toronto, and certainly with Barry Trotz with the Islanders, and then with the Todd McClellan staff in Los Angeles before taking over when the Kings moved on from Todd earlier this year. And everyone talks about his ability to communicate and just, you know, a guy who is not his way or the highway. It sounds like it's a very collaborative effort with the rest of the Kings coaching staff. Alex Laferriere, who's playing in his first playoff game, his college kid out of, not a kid really, but out of Harvard a couple of years ago. But he talked about how Jim Hiller spoke to him and really helped him through periods of this season when, you know, he hit that kind of college wall, right? You're used to playing 40 or 45 games, and now all of a sudden you're like, geez, that gets me about halfway through what I need to get done here. And he credited Jim Hiller with really being a sounding board and providing information on how he, Laferriere, could, you know, could get back to, you know, a successful way of playing. And I think that's, you know, my sense of it around the Kings is that he just has really been a guy who's, you know, he's not afraid to make hard choices and decisions. Tonight will be the first night they've had their full healthy lineup all season. So, you know, he's had to, you know, cobble together lineups really since he took over, and now he's got a full complement of players. But it does sound like a guy who really, you know, sort of listens before he acts. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. He's been loath to go down the road of whether he's nervous or what it means to him personally. But boy, he's been, you know, this is a big moment for him.
Yep.
First NHL head coaching playoff gig after a long, long career in other roles. So it'll be interesting. And well, and no different than Chris Knobloch, I suppose.
Yeah, it's funny. You got two teams yep. playing for the third time, and neither of the coaches of head coaches have done it before. So up here, Scotty, this becomes, in terms of stylistic hockey, good versus evil, right? Edmonton is the home of free flow, forechecking hockey, you know, puck possession, make nice plays, create highlights, score goals. LA is playing this 1-3-1. Jim Hiller said to us up here last time he was here, one of his mentors is Jacques Lemaire, who is personally responsible for ruining hockey when he was coaching in Jersey and Minnesota. They had to change the rule book because of Jacques Lemaire. So I guess my question sort of becomes, you know, a fast game where we're not regrouping all the time makes it difficult for LA to get into that 1-3-1. A game that's always moving, you won't see as much 1-3-1, frankly. A slower game where people are kind of changing and the defenseman's sitting there waiting for everybody and everyone gets in their spot, that becomes a 1-3-1 game. Can the Kings beat the Oilers in a faster game if they don't get time to set up and play that picket fence game all night long? Do they have a plan B? Can they still win?
Well, I think it goes back to the lineup and the depth that this Kings group has. And it's not just up front, but I think especially up front, but certainly along the blue line. And a lot of these players who got a taste of playoff life over the last 2 years against Edmonton have grown and matured. So, you know, there's not going to be, you know, as much of the wide-eyed, you know, holy cow, we're starting the playoffs in Canada and in the heart of hockey country. So that, those kinds of things should go by the boards. And so I think if there is, you know, if you are able to roll those four lines, and again, if you get, you know, if it gets to become more of a track meet than what you would initially hope for, I do think there's enough talent there that, you know, that's it doesn't mean instant disaster for the Kings. But I think what you really want to do if you're the Kings is you want to impose your will on the Oilers as much as possible, knowing that it can't be done all the time given the Oilers roster. So, you know, I don't know that it's so much as, oh my God, if it starts to go end to end, if there is some fastness to the game, that suddenly precludes the Kings from being competitive. I don't think that's necessarily the case. But you know, it's obvious they would prefer to take Edmonton out of its comfort zone by slowing the game down, by playing in a way that takes away from Edmonton's strength and I think plays to the Kings' strength. So, you know, I'm not sure if I'm answering your question. We know how they would like to play. I think they're able to, given their skill set, you know, if things get fast, then I think that it becomes an interesting game to watch for sure, to see if, you know, how you keep pace. That's going to be one of the great parts of this chess match in this series. And if it does get faster, though, it just certainly puts a lot more pressure on Cam Talbot in net. And, you know, again, you want to make your, you know, life as easy as possible for your goaltender, especially against this Oiler team.
Hey, Scott, thanks for your time this morning. Hope you had a wonderful night with Speck and Schalke and Pierre last night. And we'll see you down at the rink later today and tonight. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime.